show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, just as we planned when we had our super secret closed door meetings with Dayton Moore about the offseason for this organization, the Royals have made one more single solitary move in the past week that has given us yet another topic to talk about, just like we drew it up. The Royals, of course, actually, before we get to that, of course, I am your host, Jeff Herr, and with me, as always, the revolutionary himself, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this very evening? That's all I got at this point.
It's an evening. It's a generic evening.
It exists.
I'm all right, I guess. I don't know. It's a Wednesday. We're recording on Wednesday. You're listening to this probably on Thursday.
Yes.
So it's a Thursday too, somewhere.
There it is.
That's all I got.
Okay. Well, as I was getting into, the Royals have signed outfielder / first baseman Brandon Moss. Now, there is obviously a lot to unpack from such a thing. The most negative aspect, of course, being that he spent 2016 and 2015 with the St. Louis Cardinals. So that's immediately a downgrade. But if we can move past that, not all of 2015, but all of 2016. But if we can move past that, of course, then we can get to the fact that Brandon Moss has actually been pretty good over the last 5 years. And it was a 2-year contract for $12 million, only 3.75 of which will be paid out in 2017. So again, the Royals are really trying. You know, I don't know if maybe this almost feels like a scenario where they almost wanted to give a 1-year contract, but they gave a 2-year contract just so that they could give less money in 2017, just so that they could have a little bit more room to work with. I still think there's another signing coming. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But Brandon Moss signed with the Royals. They had the press conference today, made it official today, being Wednesday, of course. And the funnest connection for Royals fans, not necessarily for Brandon Moss himself, is of course that the best year of his career, his only All-Star appearance, 2014, was the year that he was on the Oakland A's. And was the year that he hit 2 home runs in the wild card game at Kauffman Stadium and still wound up on the losing end of that game as the Royals ran roughshod through the AL playoffs and went to the World Series, losing to the San Francisco Giants. So that's pretty cool. I saw a quote on Twitter today. He was on from the press conference where Brandon Moss noted himself that the 2014 wildcard game was both the most fun and the saddest baseball game he's ever played. So there is that. but break it down for me, Mike. When you first heard the news, Brandon Moss, what are the thoughts that were going through your head?
Well, like, at various points in the offseason, the Royals were linked to some of these DH types. I mean, they let Kendrys Morales go. He ended up signing for 3 years and $33 million with the Blue Jays very early in the offseason. The Royals have for years talked about wanting to do a rotating designated hitter spot in the lineup. And with guys like Chester Cuthbert and someone like Sal Perez, someone like Lorenzo Cain, you know, guys that they might want to give a half day off to, it kind of seemed like that's just what they were going to do. Plus, you get into the element of the Royals saying that their payroll is stretched as thin as they can get it. And I didn't really expect them to do much as far as a hitter. But we heard them link to Chris Carter. We heard them, well, I don't know if we heard direct link to Chris Carter, but they were interested at various points in Matt Adams from the Cardinals. There was some reporting of interest in Pedro Alvarez, a little bit about Moss. And so I guess I wasn't that surprised, but I was kind of, I guess, indifferent when the news broke. But, you know, the more you look at it, he's got a lot of pop, you know, and that's going to be the thing that the Royals are kind of looking at. And for the contract, he's going to make less than $4 million and he might hit 25 homers. That's a pretty good deal. Just no matter how you make it work. And I'm with you. When for any of these guys like Moss, and if they sign anybody else, I'm pretty sure they're going to be trying to do the same kind of thing, where they're backloading a second year on a deal, even though they really are signing these guys more or less for 1 year. So Moss is going to get, you know, $7-some million in the second year, which if he hits like he has in the past, he'll probably be worth that. So it's a pretty good deal for the Royals. Moss gets an opportunity to play a pretty good amount of time. So I would expect him to probably DH right away, but if he needed to, he could play first base. He could play some in the outfield. And it's possible that, you know, with that second year, he might be replacing Eric Hosmer next season. So, you know, all in all, I've kind of convinced myself that I think I like it. I'm not super thrilled with it, but I think when you compare Moss to the other guys, it makes sense. You know, he's just as good an option as any of the others. And he was, you know, willing to take this kind of deal that gives the Royals a little bit more room to maybe add a couple pitchers if that's something that they're going to go do. So I think it's a win for the Royals, even if it's, you know, maybe slightly, you know, maybe a slight win, because Moss isn't going to light the world on fire. But Moss gets to have the security of 2 years, and there's a mutual option at the end, of course. Wouldn't be a Dayton Moore free agent contract if there wasn't a mutual option.
It's a staple.
Jason Vargas doesn't have a mutual option. His was a flat 4 years when they signed him. But, you know, Moss is going to be guaranteed that $12 million, and he's got some escalators, some incentives for every, I think it's every, I think if he gets over 500 plate appearances, he'll make an extra $500,000. But he gets like $50,000 for each 50 plate appearances or something like that. 25.
Yeah, like starting at 350, it goes every 50 plate appearances, I think.
I think it's every 25.
Is it every 25?
It starts at 350, yeah. Because there's, okay, yeah, there's a bunch of them to where, you know, he really would, he plays for a week. It's basically he'll make $50,000 a week.
That's 2,000 an at bat right there.
Yeah. So you just hope that those are, you know, valuable at bats for what he makes. So it's a pretty good deal for him. He gets the opportunity to turn it into, you know, maybe $13 million contract. $13,000.
Right.
Union would have issues.
If he's lucky.
It's 1878 again.
Yes.
Harry Wright in the Cincinnati
Reds.
Harry Wright, is that right? I'll have to look that up later. Doesn't matter. But yeah, that was my kind of idea was, okay, cool. Then I moved on. You know, it wasn't, you know, a couple years ago when they signed Kendrys Morales, I was like, no, I don't want him to sign Kendrys Morales. And they turned out I was wrong. Right. that was a pretty good deal. You know, and yeah, really when I think about it, they pretty much kind of got him in a better deal now than what they got for Morales back then. So that's not too bad. When it all shakes out, I guess.
Not too bad at all. And, you know, I kind of had a similar feeling what you said, and it's kind of weird because it is one of those scenarios where you do kind of have to – your initial reaction is probably, meh, okay, you know, but you do kind of have to look at it to be able to convince yourself that it's actually good. I think the initial reaction from most people is probably neutral, and I think a lot of that stems from – you'll hear from a lot of different people – no such thing as a bad one-year contract. Well, there's 80% of the time there's no such thing as a bad two-year contract. You know, I mean, especially if it's less than $20 million. So 2 years for $12 million, I mean, in baseball terms, you know, it's a lot of money for you and me. But for baseball terms, like, you know, that's nothing. You know, I mean, you're not going to fret about $3.75 million this year. You're not going to fret about $8.25 million next year for Brandon Moss, especially when, you know, assuming the Royals lose as much as we think they will in free agency, you're going to offload a ton from the payroll. But when you do look at it, you know, it's better than some scenarios that I think you could have where you might sign somebody and you look at it and you feel worse about it. So this one, you might start out lukewarm and then you look at it and you're like, nah, hey, wait a second, you know, this actually isn't all that bad. You know, from from 2012. Excuse me, from 2012 to 2016, in the last 5 years, you know, he's hit 242, 324 on base, 478 slugging. So that's a over 800 OPS, 119 OPS plus, which would have been, if not first on the Royals roster last year, top three for sure. He's had 123 home runs in that time. So he's averaging about 25 home runs a year and, you know, 345 RBIs. So, let's see, how many is that divided by five? You know, 70 RBIs a year. So, I mean, if that's what you're looking at, you know, if you're looking at someone who's going to hit for the Royals 240 or 250, you know, slug 470-ish and hit you 28 or 25 home runs and 75 to 80 RBIs, I mean, I think you're sitting pretty good at that point, you know. So if you're paying as you mentioned, you know, paying less than $5 million, less than $4 million for that kind of production in 1 year is going to look pretty good. I mean, if they were paying the excuse me, I mean, if you were paying $12 million and you got 25 home runs and 80 RBIs and 800 OPS, you'd probably be okay with that at this day and age, the way baseball salaries are. So to get that for 2 years, I think that's pretty good. And then you look at, with a two-year contract, you know, what's your goal here? So your goal is to get one really good year from him, hopefully, you know, really good year in relative terms. Yeah, hopefully it's 2017. And then you pay him in 2018. If he has a good year, fantastic. If not, then you can cut bait with him during the year. And you're not going to be out that much money if you really want to, or you can try and offload him and trade him for some low-level prospects, you know. So the Royals are by no means hamstringing themselves with anything. And, you know, this is another scenario, especially with the low amount of what they're spending this year. You know, it's we've been talking about the money they've been saving with some of the transactions they've made with the Davis trade and the Dyson trade. And now you're starting to see a little bit of that come back, you know? So Royals signed Brandon Moss. So they've kind of ate into a little bit of that money that they've saved. So it's not something that they were just, you know, lowering the payroll for the sake of lowering the payroll, as some people initially thought, you know? So that's a good sign. And there could be some more moves coming.
Moore said at the press conference that they expected probably to make another move before spring training, which we would assume that's going to be a pitcher. Obviously with the untimely and tragic death of Yordan Ventura, there is a spot in the rotation that the Royals need to fill, and there are guys out there who are still free agents. The Royals could also make a trade. You know, I don't know who they necessarily would trade, but I guess the usual suspects that we've talked about at various points could be on the block for that purpose. But I think when you have guys like, you know, Jason Hamels, the name they've been tied to, you don't really need to make a trade for that. But yeah, to your point, everybody was talking about, oh, the Royals aren't going to spend any money this offseason. They're not, you know, they're just going to sell off parts. And, you know, the only way they were going to actually do any kind of fire sale like thing was to actually do a fire sale, was to trade guys off, because it just wasn't going to, there was no other way that they could, you know, bring the payroll down to a level that would actually like get under the theoretical break even point that we've heard a couple years and a couple different off seasons. You know, they'd have to have traded Mike Moustakas and Lorenzo Cain and Eric Hosmer on top of the other guys. So you can see how the strategy unfolded, where they had an idea of what they wanted to do. You know, they knew that Davis was going to have a market. They got some payroll relief, and they got an outfielder with some upside. Later, they got a pitcher with a lot of team control who's going to make just a little bit over the minimum this year, who's still pre-arbitration. They saved money there even by trading Jerod Dyson. And now they sign a guy who's capable of hitting 20, 25, maybe even 30 home runs for less than $4 million for this year. So pretty much the money that they save is being reinvested, to where they're more or less payroll neutral from where they kind of probably projected themselves to be. Another point on that is, you know, mentioned Matt Adams, you know, a few moments ago, and we talked about him, you know, just before the Dyson trade, just the week before, that there was some smoke that the Royals were looking to trade Dyson and that they were interested in Adams. And the Cardinals were at one point at least interested in an outfielder. They signed Dexter Fowler earlier in the post or in the offseason. But, you know, you could have had a situation where, okay, now you're the Royals. Let's say you make that Matt Adams move. He's going to make $2.8 million in arbitration. Plus, you would have to trade Jerod Dyson. So now you don't get Nathan Carnes for Jerod Dyson, so you have to make some other move there. So really, the way the Royals ended up making it happen, they kind of come out with a decent amount of upside from the three primary acquisitions that they've made this offseason. And, you know, they don't really add payroll that takes them beyond where they figured they were going to be at the start of the offseason. So that's some pretty nice tap dancing by Dayton Moore, I would say. Obviously, the Danny Duffy extension helps, because they were able to save some money off of that by him taking a little bit of a pay cut for this year and spreading it out across the next four. But, you know, it's kind of rare to see a team make moves that are shedding payroll but also working to contend for the next year, and the Royals have kind of managed to pull that off when you look at everything in one big picture.
Yeah, and you know, we'd kind of talked about this in the Baseball Prospectus chat, you know, and I think people are kind of understandably feeling a little down about the Royals right now after everything that happened with Yordano Ventura, but you know, even still, you know, if you took the roster as they have it and you would have, and you put it on the team, you know, last season, and that was the team they were going into the season with after winning the World Series, you know, I think people would still look favorably on this roster in terms of their ability to make the playoffs again. So, you know, it's a, you know, they've had to do a lot of juggling, as you mentioned, and actually I completely agree. I think Dayton Moore's actually done a really good job of balancing out, you know, keeping the payroll under control and making the team, you know, as much better as he possibly can. And, you know, given everything that's happened, he's got them in a position that they're still likely to contend and likely to have a successful season. So, you know, kudos to him for that. And this is kind of, we've kind of talked about this shift, if you will, a little bit. And this kind of just comes back to it again. Brandon Moss, another guy with some pop, and now you're introducing it into a lineup where, you know, 2 years ago it was the kind of, you know, put the ball in play, speed around the bases type of a philosophy. But now it almost feels a little bit more like they're shifting towards the trend that started last year, which is let's just hit as many home runs as we possibly can.
Right.
You know, with Hosmer had his kind of semi-breakout year, hitting 25 home runs last year, first time he'd ever gone over 20. You know, Moose had that year a couple of years ago, and it looked like he was about to continue it last year before getting hurt. So, you know, if the power for those two continues, and then you bring in Jorge Soler, who all anybody's talked about since he was a prospect is his power level. And then Brandon Moss, who's got some pop. You know, Salvador Perez has always had it. And so now all of a sudden this roster, which went from a kind of quick athletic one, is now seemingly shifted more towards a kind of power-based lineup. And, you know, there's, you know, could the Royals, could they take down the almighty Steve Balboni homer demon? Can he be expelled from the confines of Kauffman Stadium? Finally, they've got a couple candidates that could do it, I think, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, Jorge Soler has that kind of power. Brandon Moss, I mean, he's hit 30 home runs once in his career. I don't know if he's got enough, especially at Kauffman, to hit 37 or more. But who's capable, in your eyes, of breaking the Balboni record? I think Jorge Soler is.
Breaking Balboni?
I think Eric Hosmer is in a career year.
Yeah. I don't think
that's like his standard power level. Let's see.
Well, I went through and I just jotted down, and you know, who has hit 20 homers in a year for the Royals. So I'll make my judgment based off of, you know, kind of built off of that. So Sal Perez has had two 20 homer seasons. He's probably not going to play enough to get to 36. But who knows? You know, Ned Yost may try. We'll see. Hosmer, I think that we've seen him enough to know that he's going to hit the ball on the ground a lot. And that's going to rob him of some potential at-bats where he might be able to hit homers. He got 25 last year, but he also had a lower batting average than we kind of expected. Kauffman Stadium is going to be tough. You know, I think 25 is probably his top end for the Royals. I think if he was a Yankee or maybe an Oriole or, you know, someone with the Red Sox, you know, I think any of those spots, yeah, he could probably hit 30 home runs just about any given year over the next 6 years, 7 years from this point on. But 25 might top him off. Jorge Soler is going to be able to he's only hit 12 homers is his career high, but he's also had some injury things. He's been kind of a part-time player here and there with the Cubs. So he never really got the opportunity to play every day. He should have that this year. So the power is like a 70 on the scouting scale. And if he can make contact, well, yeah, he may have a shot. If he got 600, 650 at-bats, yeah, he would have a pretty decent shot at clearing that. Gordon has two 20 home run seasons. I don't think he would be able to do it. That's just that's a big jump from what he usually does, but he should be good for about 20. You know, Moss, I would say, would be difficult, but not impossible. The thing with Moss is that he doesn't hit left-handers very well. He hits right-handers quite well. And thankfully, the Royals will probably face righties more often. Last year, they faced them about two-thirds or three-fourths of the time. The Royals faced a right-handed starting pitcher. So that would figure that Brandon Moss is probably going to be getting three-fourths of the starts at, say, DH. He might fill in the outfield or first base here and there. Might even start against some lefties. So he may not get the playing time for it, but he probably has enough power. And he has some opposite field power that could allow him to put, you know, maybe approaches 30 again. But if I did have to pick one guy, I would say Mike Moustakas may have the best shot of catching Balboni. And, you know, that's based on, you know, we've seen before his scouting reports. He was California high school home run champion. He was considered one of the best power hitters in his draft, one of the best power hitters in the minors. He hit the most home runs in the minor leagues one season. You know, and while it's been slow going to get him to where he's a consistent hitter, you look at what he did last year before he had his hand injury, or hand or thumb. Was it his thumb? I don't remember what he hurt before he blew his knee out. But he had like 8 home runs in a month. So you extrapolate that over, you know, 6 months, he would have a shot, even with some kind of a downswing. So I think that the power is there. I think he's getting to a point now where he's probably more comfortable. We'll have to see how he comes back from a torn knee, but
let me add this. Mm-hmm. It is, in this podcaster's estimation, no coincidence that the year that you mentioned where he led the minors in home runs, he led it with 36.
So,
I mean, it's out there. That's all I'm saying.
But they also play one fewer month than the minors, so there's some oomph to be had there. And, you know, Moustakas is someone who has shown good plate patience. He's shown the ability to adjust. He's probably going to be, barring some crazy breakout from Chesler Cuthbert or Hunter Dozier, and barring some setback on his injury recovery, he's going to be penciled in for, you know, nearly all the playing time at third base. So if he stays healthy, I think he's got a pretty good shot at pulling it off. It's, you know, I think that the pedigree is there. The playing time will be there. And he seems to have a little better sense of himself. And he's, you know, he's not going to give up at bats against most lefties. So I would say, yeah, I would say Moustakas is probably the best shot, if I had to guess at any one of them. But up and down the lineup, you know, there's the potential for maybe 6 seasons of 20 home runs. And Lorenzo Cain has hit 16 in a season. So if he gets back to that and maybe gets a little bit extra, you might have, you know, this team of home run hitters with Whit Merrifield and Alcides Escobar kind of just making it up somewhere else. Or Raul Mondesi, he might be in some of the spots. But it does seem like it's an effort to add that power. The Royals also traded for Peter O'Brien, who's going to be now, he should open up in Omaha. But he could, you know, he hit 20 homers 4 different times in the minor leagues with a career high of 34. So he's in that same kind of territory. The question's going to be with Moss, with Soler, with O'Brien, for whatever he plays, is making contact. And it's such a shift from what we're used to, that the Royals have kind of leaned into this strikeout accepting culture that we're at now. And they're willing to, you know, just see if they can hit the ball out, which is an odd shift, and it's weird timing for it. But at the same time, it's kind of like the market has shifted itself to where those guys are kind of available. And so you can kind of bet on the upside. So Moss fits right into that, who, even though he'll probably, you know, only play 140 some games based on, you know, sitting against certain left-handed starters, you know, I would figure he could probably hit a pretty good amount of homers, even in Kauffman. And while he will strike out a lot, he's generally been able to walk. For his career, he's a 9.3 walk rate. So 9.3% of the time he'll walk, which, that's pretty good. Soler is in the same kind of boat, where he's got a really pretty good eye at drawing walks, and maybe they both chase some things, but they will accept the walk if it's handed to them, which is completely foreign to the Royals. So it's that's kind of the most intriguing thing of the whole offseason, is this willingness to go for those guys who are home run hitters, who, you know, kind of 3 true outcome guys. They'll walk, they'll strike out, they'll hit homers. And, you know, we'll see how it ends up turning out and how the playing time shakes out. But, I mean, you could see Brandon Moss hit 30. You could see Kendrys Morales hit 30 homers last year for the Royals. you know, despite playing half the time in Kauffman Stadium and in a bunch of AL Central parks. So Brandon Moss could probably pull that off. You know, Soler with full-time work could hit 20. I don't think it's unheard of to see a team that puts the ball over the fence quite a lot. And Chester Cuthbert on the bench had 12 last year. I mean, he played full-time, but 12 home runs in his first full season. That's not too shabby. He needs a spot to play in. Just kind of glancing at their numbers from last year, Brandon Moss had an 828 OPS against right-handed pitchers. Chester Cuthbert had an 819 OPS against left-handed pitchers. So if you wanted to platoon those guys, you could get some pretty good production out of the DH spot and, you know, see how it works. So really interesting way of recrafting the lineup around guys that you already had, but, you know, adding these other elements as far as guys who can walk and guys who can hit the ball out. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. You know, it's exciting. It's an exciting new trend. I think at the very least, it's going to make this season very fun to watch. You know, not that they haven't been fun to watch, but you know, if things were to go south a little bit, you know, they're still going to have, there's still going to be a lot of fun to watch for at least that reason alone. Cause you know, they hopefully might hit a lot of dingers. They might break Balboni's record, but there's also a good chance, you know, even if nobody gets there, you know, excuse me, there could be a couple records that go down, you know, in terms of team home run record. And, you know, I'm thinking amount of players in a single season to hit 20 plus home runs. I mean, you mentioned the guys who you thought maybe could, you know, hit, you know, 25 or more and maybe take a run at Balboni's record, but just the sheer amount of guys who could easily, you know, feasibly hit 20 home runs, like you mentioned, you know, Hosmer 25 last year, Perez is coming off two straight 20 home run seasons, Moose had 20 in his last full season, Brandon Moss has averaged 25, Soler definitely has 20 plus homer power, you know, Gordon's done it in his career, so, you know, I mean, you could have six players feasibly hitting 20 home runs, which, I mean, the Royals haven't. We're making a big deal when they get three guys that do it. So,
right. I remember in 2011 when they had, when Hosmer was one short from, what was it? Melky, Gordon, Francoeur.
The whole outfield, I thought. Yeah.
And there might've been one more, but maybe that was it.
But I think that was it.
I think that was it. But all three of those hit 20 and Hosmer was right there. And it's like, okay. Yeah, that'll inspire an Our Time slogan for 2012. No wonder that popped up. Of course, didn't, you know, wasn't their time, but
no,
that's
no,
another, that's another,
that's
show.
Another, it's another podcast perhaps before the season starts.
Right.
Rehash 2012. I don't know if, why would we would ever want to do that.
Right. But it wasn't that bad of a year. It just wasn't a good year.
No. And it's like so many pre-2013 Royals seasons, it was the one of those, if you remove this thing, you know, it was because they were 2012, they were 71-91 or 72-90 that season, and
that was the year of the
they started off 3-14,
the O for homestand.
Yep,
they lost every game of a 10 game homestand.
So I mean, if you're 71-91 and you remove, well, let's see, hold on a second.
Even if you go,
if you're 71-91, you remove 3-14, you're what, 68-77? So it's quite a bit better.
It's a little closer.
And then
if you're at least 500 in that stretch, you're, I mean, it's not great, but
yeah, so you move five games the other way. You're 8-9 at that point instead of 3-14. And then your final record is, you know, 76-86. Feels a lot better than 71-91.
Yeah. Still not good, but
still not good. But, you know. It doesn't, you know, they righted the ship after that season, but still. Regardless, that'll count. We don't need to do a whole podcast on it now. We already recapped enough of 2012. But you know, talking about Dayton Moore making some moves on this roster. You know, and you talked about adding another pitcher. Another news that came up is the Royals have been linked now this week to Jason Hamill. So, you know, obviously nothing has happened yet, and it's just kind of a little bit of smoke, not enough that you think it's inevitable, but it's a move that seems to make a lot of sense for both Jason Hamill and the Royals. So when you hear a rumor like that, you know, what's your first thought on how someone like Jason Hamill would fit on the Royals?
I mean, I think he'd be fine. He's you know, he's had 30 starts each of the last couple of years. He was pitching mostly for the Cubs, but you know, he's pitched for Baltimore, he's pitched for Oakland. He actually he gave up the walk-off hit in the wild card game. So that would be another thing with Moss where the you get tied to that, that wild card game. But I mean, he the last couple of years he had 102 OPS plus in 2015 and 105 last year. He's kind of pretty bland, honestly, as a pitcher. You know, we've talked a lot about some of the relievers and some of the guys like, you know, Romo and Holland and other guys, you know, who are dynamic and all that. But Hamill, he's just kind of this guy who goes out and he strikes out seven guys per nine and he walks 2.5 per nine and gives up some hits. And, you know, that's about it. You know, he's got a career 4.42 ERA, 97 ERA plus over his career, 4.22 FIP. I mean, he's very whatever, but whatever will work if you can get 30 starts out of him. You know, 30 starts, six innings a start gets you 180 innings, and the Royals could definitely use that at, you know, average or slightly above average. And I think the Royals still have enough on defense that they would make a good pitcher better. Hamill's been able to play in front of the Cubs, and he's had two pretty good years. So that will help. And, you know, I think playing in Kauffman would help him. So I don't see why he would be any worse than he's been. It just kind of comes down to the, you know, what the money would be. You know, he's surprisingly been had a pretty quiet market. So I don't know where his starting point was with, you know, most teams in negotiations. He made like $9 million last year. But at this stage in the game, we're a couple weeks from pitchers and catchers reporting. You know, he's probably going to be in that same kind of boat where the Royals might.
And he'll turn 35 by the end of the season, too. So,
yeah, so
like he's a spring chicken anymore.
He can't really sit there and ask for, you know, that 5 for 75 kind of deal. He kind of needs to get it done. So I don't know if that ends up being some deal where he takes 1 year with an option year, or if he does something like what Moss did with, you know, two seasons with a backloaded second year and a mutual option on the end. I would bet if the Royals get him, that's how they get him. And I would bet it would it'd probably be fairly similar to what Moss is getting, you know, with similar kind of incentives. You know, if he pitches in, I don't know how many games they might set. I'd have to remind myself on what they can actually do as an incentive. They can't make it like, you know, get X amount of strikeouts or X amount of home runs. It has to be like games, games finished, maybe innings, plate appearances, things that are more based on playing time rather than what you do with that playing time, which is always kind of interesting. But, you know, I would think they'd probably give him some kind of bonus after 140 innings, after 150, after 100, you know, whatever, to try to give him incentive to, you know, for whatever his performance is going to be, something that's attainable, that, you know, he's guaranteed this, but he has a good shot of adding, you know, maybe another million, kind of like what Moss got with his plate appearance clauses. But Hamill's probably the best starter who's still out there, and I really would have expected him to sign by now, but the Royals have a need. They probably have just enough left in payroll to go after him, and I think he'd fit well. So it's not surprising to have them linked to him. And I, you know, I kind of had a hunch that, you know, for the last month, month and a half, that they would be a really good fit and that there would probably be something that would happen, but there's been no noise on him. You know, it's just, he kind of pops up here and there, but nobody's strongly connected to him. So, you know, maybe that means that he's asking for too much and we'll have to settle, or maybe it's just, you know, I don't know. It's a really weird situation because he's just not popping up on a lot of radars, or at least he's not getting reported on the way you might expect someone with a pretty decent track record to get reported.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those – I feel like every year there's one of these types of guys where people are like, oh, you know, this will be a good – not anyone that, you know, everyone makes a huge deal about, but, you know, something that people are like, oh, you know, this guy's gonna be kind of – right in the middle of the market, you know, the major dominoes will fall and then this person will probably sign somewhere for a lesser deal, but we'll still get a good deal. And then they just kind of fades away. No one kind of talks about them. And then, you know, eventually they sign a deal that's a little bit less than people thought they would. So
yeah, the kind of deal, you know, where you start asking, why didn't we get him for that?
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's all, you know, it took. Why couldn't we do that?
Irvin Santana was kind of like that a little bit. And didn't Matt Garza, he had kind of an off season where he kind of kicked around for a little while before he actually got signed.
Was it Garza? I don't remember. Or
who am I thinking of? I think the Cubs signed him. I can't. But anyway.
Cubs get all those guys, it seems like.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, it feels like there's somebody like that every year. And, you know,
well, Chris Young was kind of that way in 2015,
yeah,
where he signed into spring training and had a good year the year before,
yeah,
but, you know, wasn't really in demand because, you know, he's Chris Young and he's got injury history and he's, you know, high fly ball rate. So, you know, that cuts out a bunch of teams. You know, the Yankees were not going to be interested. The Red Sox were not going to be interested. The Rockies were not going to be interested. The Diamondbacks, yada, 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 yada. You know, anywhere where the ball can fly out accidentally, not going to be interested in Chris Young.
No.
And he pitched in Kansas City and was still pretty bad last year. But he was good in 2015 and good in 2014 before the Royals signed him. So, and, you know, relatively pretty good deal. So, yeah, it seems like there are more of those guys this year where the market's really weird and it's not really shaping up. So, I mean, Hamill, I would have expected him to be signed by now because it was a thin pitching market to begin with as far as starters, with a lot of guys with question marks. And even, like, the best guy out there was Rich Hill, who, you know, his injury history and he's fallen out of the game, you know, a couple of years ago. You know, he had to get an independent league job for a couple of years to just work back. That was your top pitching target of the season, you know, of all offseason in all of Major League Baseball. It's just like, all right, it's a far cry from the Zach Greinke and David Price offseason. So, you know, I think it ends up working out that Hamill would probably be interested in playing for a team that could contend, and the Royals have a spot for him, and it just has that feeling that they're going to track him down. They've been connected to him a couple times, even lightly, and there's nobody else who seems to get mentioned. So, you know, it makes sense to me, I suppose.
Yeah. And, you know, it's another one of those similar to Brandon Moss, maybe not quite as good when I say it this way, but, you know, where you if you squint, you know, he does look a little bit better than your initial reaction of probably just kind of like, eh, you know, he's going to be solid. You know, because if he's had kind of an interesting career where he's pitched, you know, starting out, this is Jason Hamill, of course, but we're starting out for Tampa Bay and then moving to Colorado. Now, you know, there he had three pretty poor seasons, but it's Colorado. Some pitchers just don't do well there. And so, you know, Jeremy Guthrie is an example. Somebody didn't do very well in Colorado, changed scenery, came to a much much friendlier confines of Kauffman Stadium, and was able to kind of right the ship a little bit. So, you know, maybe there's a little bit of that going on at that time for him. But then he moved to Baltimore. And it's like, that's kind of a tough place to pitch as well. He had a good season there, but then he had a really poor season there. And then since then, when he's pitched in Chicago for the Cubs and then in Oakland in the three seasons since, he's had a 3.68 ERA, a 1.16 whip. He's averaged 8 strikeouts per 9 and just about 2.5 walks per 9 innings. So, you know, over the last three seasons, he's been a pretty solid to, you know, decently above average pitcher. And if you could sign Jason Hamill to maybe even a similar, as you mentioned, deal, a Brandon Moss type deal, maybe backloaded, get a lot of incentives in there. You know, he's only pitched, let's see, you know, roughly 170 innings per season for the last 3 years. So maybe you have an escalator in there where, you know, every 6 innings, every 5 innings above 170, you get X thousand dollars or whatever the case may be, you know. So there's little things you can do to play with it. But, I mean, if that's the production you're getting from him for, you know, 2 years or just this year at the very least, then I think that's something you can be pretty happy with if you're the Royals.
Yeah. I mean, Jason Vargas will be a free agent after this year. Ian Kennedy can opt out. So, you know, it feels like it's going to be some kind of a rebuilding year. So the Royals will need pitchers. And if they can get someone like Hamill locked in now for, like, say, a $4 million, $8 million split, you go into next year with a league average pitcher who can get you close to 200 innings at $8 million bucks. That's pretty good. That's the way the market is shaping up and the way pitching ends up, you know, getting paid these days. That's okay. That's not a bad deal at all. $8 million for 1 year of, you know, average to possibly good pitching. I think any team would take that, and the Royals especially. So, just by means of comparison, I was just checking out Brandon Moss, what he made last year. To figure out what he you know, may command. You know, so he had an $8.25 million salary last year, took this 2-for-12 deal. So Hamill made $9 million last year in the same kind of ballpark money wise. I mean, not to say that, oh well, he took this so he would take that, but you know, it would be a reasonable offer for the Royals to say, hey, look, we offered Moss this, he made that. We're going to offer you this, yada, you know, see how it works. So it has that feeling of a Royals move at this stage in the game to me. It's not reliable. You know, I think I felt like they were going to sign a bunch of guys that they didn't sign. I felt like they were going to make a lot of trades that they didn't make. So, you know, I can't see into the future, unfortunately.
No. None of us can.
Or this podcast would be a lot different, I think.
Yes.
It'd be subscriber based. Because
it would be.
I could tell the future. So, I mean.
Yes, we had. Dayton Moore would be one of those subscribers.
Absolutely.
And that would be. We'd be like, hey, man, just chill. You're going to win the 2015 World Series, okay? So just hang out, do your thing, and you'll get there. And that's because, I mean. Right. We can't tell the future, but we were obviously as calm on this show the whole time. I mean, we
absolutely
thought they were going to win the World Series this entire time.
Never doubt.
Never once has there ever been even a kernel of doubt about Dayton Moore and the Royals on this show since its inception.
Knew
that's
he
just
was the guy
right
the whole
there.
Time, every single minute of every day. Just
that was
and you can't find any proof to the contrary anywhere, especially
yes.
if you.
No.
Search our archives. You definitely cannot find those in, you know, 2013 episodes.
No, and that that was the Sean Spicer recap of this week's of the podcast history.
Right. We've never been wrong about Dayton Moore. Period.
Baseball. No, never been more. Never been wrong. So, well, with that, you know, I think we'll leave you. That's kind of the gist of what there's been to talk about with the Royals. It's been kind of slow going in the baseball world. It's that kind of the calm before the storm, if you will, as you mentioned a little bit ago. There's, you know, a couple weeks now before pitchers and catchers report. We're already to February.
Yeah.
Crying out loud. So, and can you believe this, Mike? Can you believe this? Exactly 2 weeks from today, my daughter turns a year old.
Wow. That flies.
Right? It does, doesn't it?
It's crazy.
And she's walking. and she's talking, she's saying some words and stuff. So pretty crazy, man. It's life comes at you fast, as the kids say these days, and it most assuredly does.
That's true. We did. There was the obligatory "This is the year for Kyle Zimmer" column came out. So that's out there too.
Of course.
So
that is it.
We'll see how he recovers. He's throwing again, so
we'll have to see if he makes his way into my semi-bold predictions this year.
Right.
Or have I been burned too much? We'll have to wait and see. I'll keep you in suspense about whether or not I think Kyle Zimmer is actually going to do anything this year.
We just need the Bubba Starling column now.
Oh, the Bubba Starling. The trifecta will be complete. I guess that's not really a trifecta, is it?
We could throw Miguel Almonte in there if we wanted to.
That's true. Or there's a Jorge Bonifacio.
That's probably the better one.
We can group those two together to get the trifecta there.
Yeah.
That'll be it.
Disappointing Royals prospects.
Yes, but
I bet we'll see Bonifacio this year. So at some point,
I think we will. Yeah. And kind of on a similar note, you know, that Keith Law came out with his ESPN Insider rankings for the Royals farm system. What did he have the Royals at, 25th? Overall?
Yeah.
But when you read the write-up, it's a little bit more positive than what you would think for the 25th ranked system. He said, I can't remember the exact terminology he used, but that they're the biggest system in the majors, because he's like, well, what if this person stays healthy, and what if this person gets a little bit more command, and this person does this, and pretty much every one of the top 10 prospects that he had was like that. And it was, okay, well, if Kyle Zimmer has finally fixed himself and he can stay healthy, and if Miguel Almonte can get things back under control, and if Josh Stalmont can actually learn to control the ball, and if Matt Strom can be a good starter and can be, you know, all these different things of what ifs for all these players. And, you know, it's true, but it could be one of those seasons where, you know, the Royals had a lot of very heralded prospects, you know, even before 2010, of course, because of the high draft picks they had.
Mm-hmm.
But even with 2010, you know, they had a lot of players take big steps forward that push that farm system up. You know, guys like Chris Dwyer, who wasn't super heralded, and Danny Duffy, even, who was, you know, third round pick. He was, you know, people, he's kind of one of those guys people had their eye on, but they weren't, you know, thinking Danny Duffy was going to be some super elite pitcher. You know, that was kind of the Mike Montgomery role. And John Lamb, people didn't know what to expect because he was coming off all these injuries and stuff. And, you know, they all had a really good year in 2010. And so,
well, and even with all of that, you know, that was the year that the Royals ended up with the like 9 guys in everybody's top 100 prospects list. And I don't think Salvador Perez was even on it.
No,
like he wasn't
Salvador
even
Perez
in there.
Wasn't on it. And Yordano Ventura wasn't in there. I think they had Ventura at the time, so, but he still wasn't in there.
They had him, but he was still in like rookie
16,
ball.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know,
was he 16? No, he wasn't that young.
No, he was.
He was like 18, 19.
Yeah, he'd have been 18 then. But the trivia question I always like is, who was the first Dayton Moore draft pick to make the major leagues with the Royals? And it was Greg Holland, who was a 10th round pick, came out of nowhere. And Kelvin Herrera came out of nowhere. And those were the guys who, you know, figured so huge in 2014 and 2015. So, you know, those guys that the Royals have in their system, those what-if guys, you know, if you get two of those guys to break, you know, you might have something. If you get Kyle Zimmer to be healthy and he can actually make, you know, enough starts to cover 40 innings in the big leagues, you might get a look at something. And then next year he can take off and maybe finally realize that potential. Or if Jorge Bonifacio learns to control the strike zone better, he might be a guy who you see in a year or two hitting 20 homers in the majors for the Royals. You know, it could happen. They could both do nothing and just bounce up and down and fade out someday. But, you know, the Royals, yeah, like Keith Law says, as you bring up, they have a lot of those guys. And if it just kind of works out, even if Miguel Almonte just remembers how to throw strikes, that could be another one of those back-end relievers. He throws hard enough, and his changeup is good enough that, you know, that's all he would need out of the bullpen, and his curveball has always been kind of a work, but it's probably okay to be a show pitch as a seventh-inning reliever. So the Royals have some guys who, you know, they're worth keeping an eye on once spring training hits and once they start playing in the games. Because any of those dudes, that, you know, if things fall right, they play well enough, and this or that guy gets hurt or whatever, you could see them maybe break camp with the big league team or at least come up sometime throughout the season. And, you know, just to get that out of them, it's probably a win at this point for a lot of those guys.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the most interesting one for me, I think, was the Josh Stalmont. He had he talked about how basically all his stuff was like, you know, 60, 70 level stuff for his pitches, except for his command that was essentially 30 level command, where he's like, nobody knows if he's ever going to be able to figure it out, you know. And they're like, even to the point where it was so bad that even in the bullpen, you know, it's still going to be kind of risky. Almost felt like, you know, like a Jeremy Jeffress type, where just, you know, so much stuff is there, but just still just no control. So, you know, if something were to click for a guy like that, and all of a sudden he can command all this really good stuff that he has as a pitcher, then, man, you know, then he's going to start shooting up those boards. You know, if he comes out and has a hot start to the season and looks like he's actually, you know, getting some of his command to come along, then he's going to be on those midseason prospect lists, and people are going to start talking about him quite a bit.
Yeah, if the Royals could break that guy, that would be pretty nice. I mean, not break him, not literally break him. Not,
yeah, they've done that before. Not, so those,
they've been very good at that.
Shame on you, Michael Engel, not that. That language.
If they could get him to break out, that would be a pretty big deal.
To break out.
Yes, they've broken plenty of pitcher in their time.
Yes, they most certainly have.
Fixed some, but most of them stayed broken.
Yes.
Poor Dan Reichert.
Poor Dan Reichert.
Different regime, same difference.
Different regime, same. But of course, the ever. Oh God! Now I'm Colt Griffin. The ever.
Colt Griffin.
The he'll never die.
We'll have to have a most disappointing prospect show one of these days.
Ooh, that's fun. That'll be fun.
Oh, it won't be fun, but it'll be fun.
It'll be in the I'm a Royals fan, so kind of also a masochist way. It'll be fun.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, we bring those guys up all the time anyway. So,
yes. Anyway, so cold, with that, we chills. Will end the show here on this wonderful Thursday, Friday, whenever, morning, evening. And wherever. Thank you so much for listening. Hopefully, if the Royals do sign Jason Hamill, they'll do it next week, and we'll have yet another item to talk about, even though we kind of hashed out everything we need to talk about this week. But we will certainly be back to talk about it next week. And again, regardless of what we have to talk about next week, we will be 1 week closer to the beginning of the 2017 season. It's getting here, folks. It's already February. Pitchers and catchers are going to report soon. It's going to be spring. The weather's going to start getting nice. Spring training will start, and the games will be here before you know it. And then 6 months from now, 8 months from now, or 6 or 7 months from now, maybe we'll have a World Series to celebrate. Who knows? Anything can happen in this world we live in today. So with that, we will leave you. Thank you so much for listening. We couldn't do it without you. We appreciate it so much. Make sure to visit the sponsors, bpkansascity.com, of course. And as always, Kelly's Westport Inn. If you want to have some good times, we'll probably have, as they get nearer to spring training and things, we'll organize a watch party there, and we'll watch a spring training game. Maybe we'll wait till the beginning of the season. We'll have to kind of hash that out. But, you know, we usually do something around that time, and we'll definitely do something this year. So keep be ready for that, and get ready as we gear up for another another what should be fun Royal season. So thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.